I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is Pam Pascali. She is a traveling educator for the Idaho Museum of Natural History right here in Pocatello. She spent the fall traveling across Idaho in a van teaching kids about dinosaurs. Peter, that sounds like a fun gig.
It's a totally fun gig. And the cool van you get to drive around in with fossils.
With fossils.
Or replicas in the back.
Yeah, we're going to hear all about it. But first, I bet you got some nature in the news.
We've got some nature in the news, Leif. So in most species, females live longer. But in many birds, reptiles, and insects, males actually live longer. And we've got some new findings coming out of the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology that show this difference in longevity is actually deeply rooted in evolution.
Go on.
And unlikely to vanish. So one of the hypotheses that they were looking at is the heterogametic sex hypothesis. And what this hypothesis proposes that the sex that has the two X chromosomes may be shielded from harmful mutations and subsequently extend their lifespan.
Because of the redundancy.
The redundancy,
of having two of the same thing.
Yes, because especially if you have a dominant gene, that is going to protect from a recessive, which tends to be the, quote, bad causing gene.
Okay.
Tends to. And where if you have an XY, the Y is basically blank.
Sure.
And what they ended up looking at are, I should step back. In mammalian species, females have the two X chromosomes, while in birds, males have the two X chromosomes.
Okay.
And they were looking at data from 1,176 mammal and bird species in zoos. And what they found is that in mammalian species, 72% of females live longer. They have like a 12% longer lifespan than males. Okay. So that definitely statistically significant. And in birds, 68% of the males live longer. And I think that was like 13 to 14% longer than females.
Yep.
Then they even looked at the type of relationship these animals have. Birds tend to be more monogamous than mammals. And monogamous animals overall live longer.
Really?
Because there was less competition.
Okay.
Yeah, where when you look at polygamous animals, think about our elk, where males definitely have to compete every year. That really dropped their lifespan by competing. And then, interesting enough, they also found that the sex that invests in parental care also tends to live longer.
That is counterintuitive, maybe, because
you're expending
energy that you could otherwise put into your own body and live longer.
Yeah, okay, but that's what they found. And why they think it has such a strong evolutionary drive is because they were looking at animals in zoos.
Okay.
There's less pressure or energy spent on surviving in zoos. It's a safer place.
Sure.
But they found that these rules held true in the zoo as well. Animals that had the XX chromosome still lived longer. The percentage, so like with it 13% for mammals, it kind of went down to 8 or 9% longer, but they still lived a longer lifespan.
Very interesting. So redundancy of a chromosome overall extends life expectancy, right?
Yeah.
Because it limits the amount of mutations that can take place or recessives. So these are sort of hardwired, basically, hardwired differences between the sexes.
Yep.
And not a lot you can do about it unless you rewire your chromosomes.
Yeah, you know, and if you can do that, good luck. I'm proud of you. But chromosomes are chromosomes, right?
Yep, exactly. You're born with them. Very good. Well, that's an interesting one. Today, we're going to be talking about traveling exhibits by way of a mobile museum. So our question for you today on the trivia is, how many miles did our mobile museum travel in 3 months of the fall? This is in 2025. How many miles? You'll be amazed at how far Pam went. When we come back, Pam Pascali joins us to talk all about the mobile museum program we have here in Idaho. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Here at NPR, we try to reach all kinds of listeners.
My name is Leo, and I'm 8 years old.
And we take feedback very seriously.
I never hear much about nature or dinosaurs or things like that.
So when Leo wrote us about our appalling lack of dinosaur coverage on All Things Considered, we knew we had to talk to him. Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I hear from your parents that you want to be a paleontologist when you grow up, and now we've got one on the line for you.
Okay.
Let me let you ask a question.
How did dinosaurs grow to be so big?
This is hard-hitting journalism, because these are the types of questions that keep paleontologists up at night.
In public radio, we value our relationship with each and every one of our listeners. You listen to us, and we listen to you too. So keep our connection strong. Donate to this station right now. Here's how.
You know who covers dinosaurs really well? The Nature of Idaho on KISU. Support NPR and KISU programs by visiting KISU.org and click donate.
Hey, we're back from the break. I want to welcome our guest today, our second time return visitor. This is Pam Pascali. She is a traveling educator for the Idaho Museum of Natural History here in Pocatello. So first off, welcome back to the Nature of Idaho.
Thanks for having me back.
Excellent. Well, so we brought you back to talk about this mobile museum program. This is in its second year at the Idaho Museum of Natural History. This is a grant-funded project by the David B. Jones Foundation. And we're in our second year, and that allowed us to hire you on as our travel educator. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do with the mobile museum?
Pretty much, I am the museum condensed and on the road. Right now, I take our dinosaur exhibit and I take it all over Idaho.
So it's a museum on wheels.
Yes, a museum on the wheels.
So what's your wheels like? What do you have?
I have a brand new Ford Transit that's extended, and inside has been customized so that it takes part of our dinosaurs from the mountain exhibit inside the museum, and I can take a small piece of that around and introduce people to our dinosaurs.
Right on.
So with your dinosaurs, are you bringing actual fossils? Because I know we have the IVL and the 3D printing is fantastic. Or do you bring replicas with you, or a combination of both?
For my inaugural season, we didn't bring any real fossils because we wanted to see how everything goes and how everything holds up. But right now I do have 3D printed replicas, you know, to scale and everything of a lot of our dinosaurs. And then I do have one full size of our Idaho State dinosaur, the Eryctodromus. So that one's full size. I pull that out, show it off to kids.
So you're saying that the director of the museum didn't trust you with actual fossils?
I don't know if we trust the traveling. You know, it's 12 hours on the road sometimes. It's a lot of vibrations. We're not sure how things are going to hold up yet. But hopefully in the future, I'll have some little fossil, you know, that people can touch, because that's a really cool thing, that when people can actually touch a fossil, that we say, this came from Idaho 100 million years ago. So maybe next season.
Can you give us an example of the various groups of children and adults that you're reaching? Are you going straight into schools, or are you expanding out into different organizations and programs?
So right now, our main target is libraries and rural communities. So I started in the Panhandle in August, clear up in Bonner's Ferry at their library. You know, they weren't in school yet, so we had a good amount of families, but then also, you know, individual adults that wanted to come check it out. But as school started, you know, I've been doing a combination of the libraries are hosting it, but it's held at the school. It's open to the public, but then the school kids during class, they can come out and things like that. But I did go to one library in Whitebird, on your way up to Grangeville, and I was in their little tiny library, and it's a very small town, and I had the average age of people that came to visit me was 64.
It doesn't matter how old you are. Everyone loves dinosaurs.
No, yeah, I thought it would, you know, of course, kids love dinosaurs and they want to see all this stuff. But like places like Whitebird really showed that everybody is interested in Idaho's dinosaurs. And when it's advertised well by the libraries, it can bring in a lot of people.
Right on. And in smaller communities, especially being able to get, you know, some Idaho material right there in their community. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what all, let's go back to what all you have in the van. So it's Idaho specific dinosaurs.
Yep. It's all Idaho. It's all dinosaurs found in Idaho and one crocodile. And for the most part, I have bits and pieces of dinosaurs because that's what we find most often is bits and pieces, right? We have one species of dinosaur that we do find complete, the state dinosaur. But besides that, you know, a lot of our dinosaurs are still waiting for their scientific names because we have bits and pieces. And so I have vertebrae from like our small Tyrannosaur and our big Hadrosaur. And then I do have the top skull portion of the giant crocodile, which, you know, when I tell kids about it, I say this crocodile would have been as long as my van plus 5 more feet, you know, 5 feet tall, 4 feet wide, this giant crocodile thing. So the top of his skull is 3 feet all by itself. So that's really impressive. And because all these things are 3D printed, they can touch everything. So they can touch the crocodile skull, they can touch all the vertebrae, you know, and because our scanning and printing at the IVL is so good, you can really get some of the textures on it.
That's really cool. So did the materials hold up?
They did for the most part. You know, it's 3D printed material, so it's plastic and kids are real rough on stuff because, you know, they're excited, they're having fun.
Good.
I let them explore the van as much as they want, you know. So I had some kids that go in and out and in and out, and they come back outside and ask questions. They go back inside. But I think overall they held it. I mean, I didn't have to fully replace anything. You know, I had to do little repairs here and there and bring Erictodromus in for a spa day. But other than that, everything held up really well.
Very cool. How many kids were you able to, or people, I guess, did you visit in the last 3 months?
Altogether, I had just over 6,400 visitors to the Mobile Museum.
Wow, that's a lot. And you travel mostly the northern part of the state for this run?
Yeah, we wanted to get to the farthest communities first. You know, they're the ones that really don't have the opportunity to come down to the museum in southeastern Idaho. So I started clear at the top and I just kind of worked my way south, you know, until my season was over. So I started at the top at Bonner's Ferry and I got all the way down to Emmett and Payette before the season was over.
So what was your most favorite part of the program?
Interacting with the really young kids, but then also interacting with kids who are in their last couple of years of high school or that, you know, have just graduated and they're in these really small communities, right? The little kids are fun just because they want to have a blast. But then I realized talking to the older kids too is really interesting and fun because they're seeing somebody who's from Idaho, who went to school in Idaho, you know, now driving around the state doing this crazy job. And they're like, oh, we have paleontology in Idaho. We have, you know, geology like centered programs and these kinds of things that you kind of imagine only big places have, right? But to talk to the older kids about how do you get going into college? And yeah, this is actually a real thing you can do. And look at this job that I got, you know, I'm museum stuff, but not paleontology, but look what I found and it's only going to be growing. So that was really good interactions, I think, that stand out to me.
So it's a big state and you drove far, and we'll get to our trivia question a little later about how far you actually drove. But, you know, what was talking through a day, like what's a typical day for a traveling museum?
Well, I'll walk you through a week.
Sure.
Because that's kind of how I book my life out 1 week at a time. But like for the most part, Monday morning, I would get up early here at, you know, in Pocatello where I'm based. And I go pick up the van and I would head out and drive, you know, anywhere from 7 to 12 hours. And then I would stay the night. And so then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I booked myself anywhere and everywhere I possibly could. So sometimes I had three libraries in a day. You know, somebody wants me there at 10 o'clock for reading time, and then somebody else wants me to be there, you know, from 4 to 7 for a family activity thing. And so, yeah, I try and book as many as I could in there and stay for as long as they want. So I do that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Friday, I get back up and early and I drive all the way back to Pocatello. But in the middle of the week, you know, it's really fun because it's kind of nonstop and I get to go to libraries. And like I said, some libraries hosted at school. So I'd go to schools and stuff like that. And like the Lewiston Library had me in the evening, but at a park they do a lot of events at. Yeah. So that was really cool because you get people who are coming over to the park for fun, but then the library groups that like they know that Lewiston Library always does stuff there. So that was really cool. And it was a really big open space, so we could have so many people. We saw a lot of people that day.
Yeah, so were a lot of them, otherwise they were indoors? They were inside a library? Or
no, I'm always outside in their parking lot usually because I roll up with the van, you know, and it's a big cargo van like the ones they turn into camper vans. And I open up the back doors and I have a ramp that comes out. And then, you know, you enter through the back through the ramp and you explore the little exhibits and the touchables and then you exit through the passenger side. So I'm always outside. But I've started to learn and then, you know, let the libraries know that these events are pretty popular. So it's really nice to have reading time inside or coloring pages inside or books on the lawn or something to keep people busy while they're waiting their turn to go through. But I'm always outside. So the librarians might have stuff going on inside, but the van is outside and I'm there with it the whole time.
Right on. So let's think about some of the places that you've gone to in this last, I guess, road trip. You know, what are some of the places that kind of stand out that you've never been to before?
I mean, I've never been to Bonner's Ferry. That's like, what, 25, 30 miles from Canada?
Yeah.
I've never needed to go up there for anything. and so that was really cool because that was my first stop, the farthest away I had to go. And they were really nice. They had a nice lawn area that they put me on and they advertised it really well. And they had different stuff for the kids to do inside. That one was fun just because it was my first, you know, it's like, okay, figure it out. What's going to happen? We don't know, you know, trial by fire kind
of. How nervous were you?
Pretty nervous, especially when it starts to get busy, right? And you're trying to navigate crowd control and kid questions and stuff like that. So that one will always be kind of fun and special, but what other ones stand out?
You must have done that back in August.
Yeah, that was like August 12th.
Gorgeous weather up there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so seeing the colors change through the fall has been really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I lived some time in upstate New York, and, you know, you don't get fall colors like that in southern Idaho. So
right.
Driving, you know, up to, you know, the middle of the state in the canyon lands and stuff like that, and watching them every week, like, oh, it's almost fall. Oh, that one started to turn red. And now those beautiful colors was really cool. A really nice backdrop for some of our visits.
So you've got one season under your belt and you'll be ratcheting it back up this spring.
Yep.
Two things. What are you most excited for to start it back up again? And what was the most important lesson you learned on your first go around?
Oof. I think starting back up, I'm excited to see how many people, because I'll be off all winter. I won't be at the museum. It's kind of like a teacher's job, but opposite. I don't get the summer off. I get the winter off. So I'm excited to come back and see who's reached out to us, because towards the middle of my fall season, we really started seeing that people were asking, how do we schedule you? How do we get you back? Like, what other things can you do? What can you bring back up with you next time? And so I'm hoping that they'll be flooded with calls all winter. And then I'll have a full schedule when I come back in the spring and I won't have to do that work. But I'm excited to see, you know, how far the news has gotten about us and see who's interested in having us come back for different things. That'll be really cool. And to see, I left the team at the museum with a wish list kind of here's like, you know, just everyday life improvements I would like, but also things that would be really helpful for making the van more accessible. And so we'll see what happens with that. And I think, I don't know, one of the hardest lessons to learn when you start like a new educator role anywhere, right, is how to be flexible. And am I in a class? Sometimes they ask me to be in a classroom. And like during the day, I had a couple of schools where during the day they wanted me in the classroom doing activities. And then in the evening, it was like parent teacher conference or STEM night. And so then I would be outside in the evening with the van. And it's like, okay, they emailed me, you know, Thursday and I'm supposed to be there Tuesday. And it's like, okay, I hurry and come up with a, you know, a thing that can be either 20 minutes long or 45 minutes long. And for first grade through sixth grade, you know, and so being really flexible with coming up with those kinds of activities. And then also, you know, I'm most of the time I'm on the road by myself. So being flexible in a way of like, oh, something came apart. How do I fix it? Or somebody needs to reschedule or, you know, something like that. So just fitting into the role and figuring out, you know, how to be flexible in what ways is always the toughest part. But I feel pretty good about this last fall. So hopefully I'll have the kinks worked out for the spring.
Right on. Well, part of the intent with this is to get, you know, to bring our museum, which is located in Pocatello, to spread our, you know, resources and education programs across the state, which is a gigantic state. And a lot of our population lives in small places in the middle of the state. And so there is a plan to, you know, work our way. You started up far north, and we're going to work our way through the central and through the southern parts of the state so that we get good coverage over the different seasons that you're out there. So this next season in the spring, what areas are you going to be more focused in?
I'm going to be more focused in, like, not so much central Idaho, but like central and southwestern Idaho. So This fall I got cleared down to just outside Boise, and I know Boise is going to take a long time to get through their library districts. Yep. But you know, that Boise side and south, and then the other stuff like going up to Challis, that kind of area.
Right.
Stuff that might be more than just a day trip in and out, you know, but not, I don't think I'll have anything that far. So we're going to do the central kind of south western section.
Yeah. Oh, and Ada County and that's
yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's an enormous state. So you get, I mean, one of the benefits of doing this, it depends on how you look at it, it's long drive times, but you get to see like parts of the state that maybe not everybody gets to see because it's such a big place. Are there standouts?
From this
last trip?
Coeur d'Alene and Ponderay, I don't know what they're doing up there. They're hoarding all of the water. You know, I'm born and raised in southeastern Idaho. And going up there and realizing how humid it is.
Right.
And, you know, the librarian's looking at me crazy because I'm sweating the whole time outside. And I'm like, listen, we're the same state. You guys are different climate. And it was real pretty, you know. And when I was up staying in Ponderay, there was one day where actually my husband went with me that week, and I told him, I'm going to go jump in a lake. Like, this is so crazy. And down here, you can't just go jump in a lake. We got creeks and things. But so I did. I jumped in Lake Ponderay after a library visit. So that was really fun. And then, like I said, watching the colors change as I come and go every week, you know, that's really pretty. Driving up towards Lewiston, you know, in and up following the rivers, that's really pretty. So it's, you know, I'm the kind of person that likes road trips, and I've gone across the country twice, and I've done long road trips. And so being able to road trip and see all of Idaho is really cool because, you know, I'm from Idaho, but I haven't seen every piece of it. And so this way I get to see just about every little tiny small town. Right, and so that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I just think of, once we get our trivia answer down, how many miles you put in.
Yeah.
And you only saw one third of our state.
Right, right. Yeah. The trick with Northern Idaho is, you know, if I go all the way up to Sandpoint, you've got to leave Idaho, right? Go through Montana and come back into Idaho because you can't get to it from that way, but that's the fastest way. And if you want to get from the other direction, if you want to get Sandpoint from the west, you have to go into Oregon and Washington and then come back over. And I don't know if people outside Idaho know that. You've got to leave the state to get to the other part of the state. So it's a lot of driving.
No straight roads here.
Yeah.
No straight roads. Okay, so how is the quality of the roads? let's say something nice to Idaho Department of Transportation. Roads are awesome.
There is a lot of improvements going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot
of traffic and
construction. Well, a lot of construction, you know, and especially going from the Idaho-Montana border to like into Wallace and Kellogg.
Yeah.
That big, like, windy section of the highway. It looks really nice. It, you know, I was terrified to do that just looking at it on a map. And my sister had done it a couple of times because she'll go up and do the Hiawatha Trail. And she's like, oh, it's going to be bad. You're going to be in a giant van. Take it slow. But I was impressed. That was actually really nice. It wasn't terrible.
It's gorgeous up there. I love Wallace area. It's beautiful. Okay, so you've visited over, what, 20-some counties, like half of the counties of the state, 6,000-plus people. Whole towns will come out for you, right? Because you're the big thing that week, right? And so that's pretty exciting. It's a grind, I assume, also, a little bit?
Yeah, every week is kind of a grind. But it's one of those things where, you know, just keep going. It's like, I know I have every once in a while I'll have a week off because like we did Fall Fossil Fest. So I was stayed in town for that week and got ready for that. And then we had the Mobile Museum here for it. You know, but when you're in the middle of it, those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday days where I'm packed, you don't really get time to stop and be tired. You just,
you just go,
you know, and then as soon as you get into like educator mode, right, you're out there, everything's set up, the kids start showing up, it kind of feel like you're a carnival barker, but you put on the face and you're
you got to turn the smile on.
But then the kids are so excited, you know, and some of them, these little tiny kids, they know the names of all these dinosaurs. And I have to tell them, like, oh, man, I don't even know about that dinosaur, you know, and then I have a guest book. And if they have time, kids will write down in the guest book, like I ask them like their name, their age. And then I started putting, what's your favorite dinosaur? Right. Just to see what kids would put down. And I thought they'd put down something in the van, but kids know the craziest dinosaurs. And so I flip through the guest book and I'll see like, you know, Johnny, age 7. And he's written down this huge dinosaur word that I'm like, I don't know what this is. And then I Google it. It's spelled correctly, you know, but it's this crazy dinosaur. So that's really fun. So cool. I think it gets tiring, but in the moment, you know, it's always fun and energizing with the little kids and people that genuinely want to interact with you and ask questions about our dinosaurs.
That's really great. Well, trivia question time. Maybe we can ask your trivia question. So how many miles did you log in the 3 months of the fall session of traveling around Idaho?
Okay, let me double check so I'm not lying.
It's grant funded, so everything is tracked.
Absolutely.
I have to track, you know, how far I drive and how many kids I see and how many adults I see. So I am just over 11,300 miles on the van. And it only had 34 or something when I got it.
Miles?
It was brand new.
Right.
Yes. I put all those on there.
That's awesome. 11,000 miles so far.
Yeah.
In our first 3 month stint. You're about to go back out in 2026 for a couple more stints.
Yeah.
In 2026. That'll be awesome.
And again, this is just one third of the state.
This is just, just one third of the state.
Yeah. The farthest.
I guess your travel distance to get to the venues is going to be a little lower as we get closer to.
But
to,
just think of how many more venues you get to do during a week because you're not spending all that time driving.
That's and sometimes up in northern Idaho, I would drive, you know, 45 minutes, an hour in between places to get to the next place. And so I'm sure that'll go down, especially, you know, when you're going to our bigger cities down here, Boise and Twin Falls and things like that, and getting to their little libraries.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Pam, for joining
for
us to
me.
Talk about this wonderful program.
Absolutely.
The Idaho Museum of Natural History mobile van. And for anyone who's interested or wanting to book, just go visit imnh.isu.edu. Again, thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU. Shows are produced at the KISU studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of all past episodes can be found at kisu.org and select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noidkisu@isu.edu.